Everybody knows what Henry VIII looked like. Holbein's famous image of him, the colossus with the sumptuous clothes, impossibly wide shoulders, and menacing expression, is imprinted on the national psyche. Henry had this picture painted on the wall of his privy chamber at the heart of Whitehall Palace. The idealized Renaissance prince, both cultured and powerful. Ever since, this version of Henry has been hard to escape. Shakespeare's play, Henry VIII, has a performance history stretching back hundreds of years. But in all that time, it has been almost impossible to play the part in any other costume. Films, television dramas and documentaries, novels, exhibitions, all of them demonstrate our fascination with this man, and all of them echo the same image, portraying him as impossibly majestic and frightening. He has been called the Tudor Stalin, defined by his fierce and unrelenting insistence on his own authority, crushing those who stood in his way. It is undeniable that Henry was a force to be reckoned with, and one who rewrote the rules of kingship. He even rewrote the coronation oath so he could decide what constituted justice. He was the first king to be Your Majesty, and he projected an image to match this, of extraordinary wealth and splendour. At the start of his reign, there were just a handful of royal palaces. By the time he died, there were 55, including Hampton Court, Whitehall, and St. James's. He owned so much that the inventory of his possessions made after his death runs to thousands of items, tapestries, jewels, pictures, and armour. He even reorganized the English landscape. His dissolution of hundreds of monasteries left England full of ruins. His reconfiguring of London created parks for his own hunting and pleasure, which are today Hyde Park, Green Park, St. James's and Regent's Park. His fortifications stretched across the south coast of England and were not matched until the 20th century. Most of them still stand today. And Henry's image was not just about wealth and power and outward show. As one contemporary said, "Our king's heart is set not upon gold or jewels or mines of ore, but upon virtue, reputation, and eternal renown." What is not at first obvious is that so much of this was not a straightforward statement about his authority. It was an attempt to persuade. He was trying, at times with a fervour which bordered on desperation, to convince himself, his court, his country, and the monarchies of Europe, not just of his strength as King of England, but of his right to hold that title in the first place. We talk of the Tudor dynasty as if the place of that dynasty in history was inevitable and assured. But Henry himself, like his father, never wanted to be a Tudor. They wanted, instead, to prove their unbroken succession from England's medieval kings. The fact that the Tudor line was separate and distinct from what had gone before was a curse, not a blessing. Henry VII took the throne in 1485 on the strength of a battle, a remote link to the Lancastrian line of kings, and a promise to marry Elizabeth of York. He was by no means the obvious claimant to the throne, and throughout his years as king he never forgot it, fighting off a succession of pretenders to the throne. Henry VIII never forgot either that a single wrong move, a single successful pretender, might plunge the kingdom back into civil war and extinguish all his hopes. Knowing that his authority rested on an unsteady foundation, Henry's response was to play a part, the part of the Renaissance prince. He put on an act and played it with such commitment and verve that we are still admiring the performance 500 years on. Renaissance princes were supposed to have an extraordinary range of talents, and so Henry fashioned his own image as warrior, musician, statesman, theologian, chivalrous knight, patron of the arts, peacemaker of Europe, all in turn. Early in the reign, there was the usual summer progress, where the king toured the provinces to visit and impress his subjects. A chronicler described how the king was exercising himself daily in shooting, singing, dancing, wrestling, casting of the bar, playing at the recorders, flute, virginals, and in setting of songs, making of ballads.